This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This week, the PGA Tour's best players go primetime with TGL presented by SoFi. In doubleheader action, Atlanta Drive takes on both Boston Common Golf and Los Angeles Golf Club. Plus, two primetime matchups on Tuesday. Keep up, it's golf. Tune in Monday and Tuesday at 5 p.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern only on ESPN, ESPN2, and the ESPN app.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya, how we doing? Everybody ready for some snow? All I know is the New York Yankees got their ass kicked by the New York Mets. I'm just kidding. It doesn't matter. It's spring training. Take a deep breath. I had that conversation with both of my boys when I was watching the Mets and Yankee game. They were asking, how are we doing? What's the score? Is this good? Is this bad? And what I repeated to both of my sons is the results do not matter. So as much as the headline on today's Rico Bronya is the New York Mets or the Kings of New York, I think most people would understand we are being sarcastic. We are saying it with a big smile. What we are excited about is that there is baseball to watch. I admit, Sunday afternoon, New York Mets, New York Yankees, as a blizzard is about to hit us, and we're all forced to sit there and listen to Michael Kay because we don't have a Met broadcast. No offense to Kay and the Yankee broadcast. They're not doing a Met broadcast. They're doing a Yankee broadcast. But as we're sitting there for 2.5 hours, if that's what you decided to do with your Sunday afternoon, thinking about a foot of snow that's about to hit us, at what point in this game, and I want everyone to be honest, if you watched it, at one point in this game did you ask yourself, what am I doing with my life? Like, why am I sitting here watching, you know, Christian Arroyo strike out? And why am I sitting here watching a spring training game in which Carlos Mendoza years ago would have been fined because there used to be a rule that you have to bring like 4 regulars to a spring training game? I'm looking down at my scorecard. Yes, I'm that big of a loser. I scored this game too. I mean, how many guys would you even consider regulars? Carson Benj is competing to be a regular. Mark Vientos may be a regular. Torrens is a backup. Jared Young's probably not making the team. More on him in a few. Christian Arroyo's probably not making the team. Ryan Clifford is a prospect. Vidal Brujan, I guess, could make the team as the 26th man. Christian Pache is probably not making the team. And Greg Kessinger. So under the old rules, Carlos Mendoza broke a lot of them because there were not exactly a cavalcade of regulars that made the trip up to Tampa for this Met Yankee game. But what was nice is that we were watching a baseball game. Now, I have a bunch of observations we will get into. I'm also going to read a lot of your emails today. The RicoB@gmail.com will hit a variety of subjects. I think the first thing that jumped out at me about this game is we saw an awful, awful lot of ABS challenges. I counted 8 in total. I think there were 5 by the Yankees and 3 by the Mets. And 4 were successful, 4 failed. So the success rate was 50%. I don't know what the success rate is going to end up being. I wouldn't even look at the minor league numbers as a good indicator because you're talking about major leaguers. You're talking about the guys who are the best in the world at this. I assume that the success rate is going to be a lot higher. And as I watched a few challenges, a few of them in just completely random situations, a couple of thoughts. Number one, this is the geeky aspect of things. I can't write this down in my scorecard. It hit me on day 2 because whenever there's a challenge in a game, like a bang-bang play at first base, I mentioned this the other day, I'll write down Met challenge, overturned, upheld, whatever it is. If we're going to get 8, 9, 10 ABS challenges a game, and remember, it's unlimited because as long as you're right, you don't lose a challenge, which is important. I guess it's possible we are going to get 8 to 10 a game. I mean, it's possible. Look, the reality is this. If you're good, if you are really good, let's say as a catcher, knowing the strike zone, or you're really good as a hitter, knowing the strike zone, and you're going to get this right all the time, then you may as well challenge all the time. Because, again, there's no penalty if you continue to get it right, unlike some other sports where you'll run out of challenges. So I'm watching this game, and every time there's a challenge, the good news for 99.9% of us is it moves really quickly. You cannot complain that the ABS slows the game down. It is within 10 seconds. Sometimes you don't even realize that there's a challenge going on. Michael Kay and Joe Girardi were talking about 15 other topics, and then all of a sudden it pops up on the screen, and you see definitively, no questions asked, that's a ball, that's a strike, that's confirmed, that's upheld, and we all move on with our day. So that's great, because nobody can complain that it takes too long. Anyone who complains ABS takes too long hasn't just seen the games. They're just making an assumption based on replay tends to slow games down. But in terms of this replay, it does not slow games down. The negative is that I don't have enough time to write that down in my scorebook. Hoff's laughing at me. It's true, though. I don't have enough time. I can't sit there and write, 18 different challenges in because it happens so quickly. I keep going back and forth on if there should be rules or not. Kay and Girardi did have a good conversation where they were talking about Dave Roberts admitted that he told a player on his team, he wouldn't reveal who, that, hey, you're too emotional to challenge, so we're not even going to let you challenge. Mendoza has said, I'm going to let everyone go free reign, but then if you're not successful, I'm not going to let you challenge, which makes a lot of sense. I mentioned on the last Rico episode 639 that there may need to be rules in terms of situations. But the more I think about it, if you're going to get it right, then there doesn't need to be rules. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to get it right, since there's no penalty, there's only a penalty if you get it wrong. And if you get it wrong, Carlos Mendoza should fine you. Honestly, there should be a fine system, a kangaroo court system inside the Met locker room, where if you challenge a strike that's a strike, even though you think it's a ball because you're being a whiny Jeff McNeilian bitch, and you're wrong, $50,000 fine. That's how you do it, because if you get it right, there's no reason to do it all the time. So I was looking back at this game on Sunday, if you watched it. If you didn't watch it, I'm going to go through all the different challenges, because it was actually sort of absurd. And they keep it now in the box score. So when you go to an MLB box score and you see your typical information, you'll now see ABS challenge. So we had Trent Grisham challenging a pitch that was called a strike, and it was confirmed. I think that was in the first inning, if memory serves correct. You had Luis Torrens challenging a ball. It was overturned into a strike. So I guess that was as a catcher, if memory serves correct. See, this is the problem. I forget now. I think during the regular season games, we'll probably remember more. But over the course of a 2.5-hour spring training game with so few regulars playing, it's easy to forget. I mean, I watched the whole freaking game. I don't remember any of these. Hayden Senger. Oh, no, I'm looking at a different thing now. Hold on one second. Let me get back to ABS challenges. Caballero challenged a strike. It was overturned into a ball. Austin Wells challenged a strike. It was overturned into a ball. Christian Pache challenged a strike. It was confirmed. There were two challenges by Pama, who is on the Yankees. Do I even have his name written down? I guess not. Jeez. So many changes in this game. I just lost all track of it. And then finally, the last one was Hayden Senger challenged a ball, and it was confirmed. That's a lot, man. And I don't know what the average is going to be, but I do think that Baseball Reference needs to add a stat line in which we can analyze if guys are successful or not. But then the other question you have to figure, and I'm trying to figure this out as well, and I'll get a better answer by the time spring training is over. I think I need to watch more games and more challenges and just kind of get the muscle memory of it. What's a good percentage? You know, it's funny, like, in baseball, if you get a base hit 28% of the time, you're pretty damn good. In basketball, if you make a three at 28% of the time, you suck, right? So what's a good percentage when it comes to the ABS challenge? Because you only have two, okay? It's not like you got a million. Because you only have two, I think your percentage has to be above 80%.
This episode is brought to you by White Claw Surge. Nice choice hitting up this podcast. No surprises. You're all about diving into tastes everyone in the room can enjoy. Just like White Claw Surge. It's for celebrating those moments when connections have been made and the night's just begun. With bold flavors and 8% alcohol by volume, unleash the night. Unleash White Claw Surge. Please drink responsibly. Hard seltzer with flavors. 8% alcohol by volume. White Claw Seltzer Works. Chicago, Illinois.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio.
Otherwise, it's way too risky. And then you got to follow the guidelines of the situation. Like, certain situations are just so important over the course of a game that it'll be worth it. But like that Trent Grisham challenge, when you're sitting there in the first inning, you better be right. Because if you're sitting there blowing a challenge in the first inning, you're selfish. That's what it's going to come down to. And while we heard so much about the Met locker room, did they like each other? Did they hate each other? You know what is one way to blow up a locker room? A bunch of selfish players issuing challenges, getting them wrong, and then other players saying, I didn't have a challenge because you're an idiot. You know? So we need to be careful on that regard. So that was one of my biggest takeaways from the first 2 days of spring training, just getting to digest it, getting to understand it, and really formulating kind of strong opinions on it. Last year, when they had the challenge system, it was very, okay, there it is. You knew it wasn't going to be in Major League Baseball games during the regular season, so it was difficult to care that much about it. The other thing that jumped out at me, for anyone who watched this game, in the fourth inning, Ahmed Rosario, the former Met, hit a ground ball to third base, and Christian Arroyo was playing third base, and Christian Arroyo fell on his ass, okay? Just flat out fell. He went to make the play, his feet gave out, and he fell down. And all I could think about for a good 5 minutes was, thank God that wasn't Bo Bichette. Because that would have been a gif on every Twitter account that likes to talk baseball. Look at Bo Bichette. Look at him falling on his derriere. So thankfully, that was Christian Arroyo, and it was not a Bo Bichette meme that would have gone all over the place. I think I said gif. Is that a gif, or would that be a meme, Hoff? I forget which one it is.
Is there action to it? Is there movement?
Yeah, because he fell on his butt.
Then that is a GIF.
That's a GIF. Okay.
Yes. Right. I thought it was GIF.
No, it's GIF. I see that. I'm actually confident about. I thought it was a GIF as well, but apparently it's a GIF. Okay. The other thing that jumped out at me is Vientos at first base. I'm starting to become obsessed with first base because it is bothering me, and I can have this bother relieved if I start to see guys play good defensively, but it is starting to bother me that they don't have a first baseman on this team. Like that's annoying me. It annoyed me so much that, you know, usually with the Rico emails, I save them. I read them on the air. I'm not writing a lot of people back. Not because I'm a jerk and I'm, you know, mean, but because I get a lot of them and I save them for the air to respond. But there was one guy I responded to because I'm so annoyed by first base. And I'm going to read you the guy's email because it was so douchey and it bothered me. He writes, I would say several times a day you say at least one or two things that make me scratch my head. But since you have such a volume of opinions, I have to admit you get a lot of them right, which gives you a pass, a total pass. But for such a baseball guy, for such a baseball fan, lifelong human being who enjoys baseball and understands baseball, I just don't get how you don't get it. That's an intro, ladies and gentlemen. They do not see first base as being a position where you would bring in a guy who's played the position a ton so that at least you have someone on your 26-man roster by opening day who's a bona fide, legitimate veteran at the position or someone who's at least played. Let's just throw out a number, 100 games at first base. It's not the typical position that typically front office staff or a manager is going to worry about a late inning defensive change. Of all the positions on a baseball diamond, first base is probably the last position that anyone who's ever watched baseball for the last 100 years has said, you know what? It's pretty common for us to take our first baseman out and bring in a defensive substitution at first in the seventh inning or later. I understand it's happened before. You have the Frank Thomas or David Ortiz or Mike Piazzas or Jason Giambis. And you know, every once in a while, you bring in the Doug Minkiewicz. I get it. Now and then, you're going to bring in the John Olerud. But if you look at the history of the game, you're typically looking at shortstop, catcher, third base, center field. The other corner positions, I'd say first, might be last as far as typically where a manager looks to have an extra guy on their roster who can be a late inning defensive replacement. By the way, all a fair point I want to counter. But then this guy ends it by saying, of all the positions on a baseball field, Evan, you are the most unathletic scrub that's ever existed on earth. Now, if you were a little bit taller, this makes it much easier. But if I was a manager of a Major League Baseball team and you had to play on the diamond, you're probably going to play right field because of your height. But let's say it was that fat slob Pete Hoffman, who's not really a fat slob. I'm sorry. I just like to make fun of him and all you guys, and it's just fun to talk like this. I don't really mean it, but let's just say this fat slob, Pete Hoffman, he's going to play first base because it's the easiest position defensively to play on the diamond. I wanted to read all of it because it was so annoying to me. And I actually wrote this guy back and said, look, I am an unathletic slob, but I knew how to pick it at first base. Wanted to defend myself. And Pete Hoffman is not a fat slob.
No, I'm not. I mean, even though he did say, did he say in the email too, I'm not a fat slob, or that was your addition?
No, that's him. He wanted to make it clear that he's only calling you a fat slob because other people are jokingly calling you a fat slob.
Oh, that is true. Yes.
All right. Here's the counter to this. And it's not that difficult to understand. First base has generally been a power position. It has generally been an offensive position. That has always bothered me hearing that because, yes, you typically get power from that spot, but if you're going to get power from other positions, you don't need a slugger at first base. Like, for example, in the late 90s and early 2000s, the New York Mets had a catcher by the name of Mike Piazza. Mike Piazza would hit more home runs than every other catcher. When you're getting enough production out of catcher, maybe you don't need as much production out of a typical power position. Okay, that's why that's always bothered me. You just need to hit enough home runs as a team. You just need enough offense as a team. I don't care if it's coming from the shortstop, the third baseman, the first baseman, the catcher, the right fielder, the DH. It does not matter. But in the history of baseball, which this man is bringing up, yeah, first base has typically been an offensive position. That's part of why you haven't seen your typical defensive replacement late in games. The other thing that's unique and different, because you do need to look at every circumstance under its own lens. You can't just look at, well, but look at the last 50 years. How often is there a late inning defensive replacement? The Mets don't have a real first baseman on their roster. So a lot of the examples of the past, while the first baseman may not be great, and even if that first baseman isn't your typical offensive plus player, he's competent at first base, right? Right now, there is a question on the competency at first base. It feels like Carlos Mendoza is in no rush to play Jorge Polanco a lot at first base. More on that in a little bit. So you're talking about Brett Beatty, who's never played the position, and you're talking about Mark Vientos, who I think has a chance to get better, but has always looked awkward at first base. Keith Hernandez basically said it on the broadcast the other day in the classiest way he could. How's Mark Vientos at first base? He's awkward. You know what awkward is code for? It's like when people say, oh, Evan's a nice guy, but he's awkward. Yeah, I know what that means. You're a dweeb. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know how to have a conversation or whatever it is. Mark Vientos has a lot of work to do, and I'm open to him getting better at the position, just like I'm open to Polanco becoming good at the position. But right now, in this moment, it would be ideal, or at least a little bit better, to have someone on the roster capable of playing the position. If those guys, or one of those guys, or two of those guys, turn into sturdy defensive first basemen, then it's all good. And again, I'm open to that possibility. But here in late February, I look at first base and I'm a little worried. Now, one other thing. At the end of the bottom of the fifth inning, Ahmed Rosario hit a ground ball to first base with the bases loaded and two out. And the first baseman actually made a really good play, ranging to his right and then flipping it to the pitcher covering. Matt Turner was the man's name, not the pitcher in the sixth inning, who the Yankee announcers never told us who it was. I had to go to the baseball app to find out the guy's name. But what was so odd about that play by the first baseman is I couldn't tell if it was Mark Vientos. Because when so many changes are made in spring training, especially when you're watching a road broadcast, they're in no rush to tell you. So I replayed the last play of the fifth inning about five times because I wanted to make sure it was Mark Vientos. And I wanted it to be Mark Vientos because it was a really good play. And it wasn't only a really good play. I want to be careful how I say this. He made a play that the former first baseman may have struggled with. He may have caused young Matt Turner to, you know, pull a hamstring if that flip wasn't perfect. And Vientos made a very good flip. It was Mark Vientos after reviewing it four or five times. That is a really positive sign because we may be in a world where Mark Vientos ends up playing a lot of first base. And I've spent a lot of time during this offseason talking about him ideally being a designated hitter. But if Polanco's going to be the DH because Mendoza's mentioned this surgery from a year and a half ago, and we've mentioned a lot that Polanco has not been a healthy player. Like, one of the challenges around him is keeping him on the field. And if they deem DH as the place to keep him on the field, the same thing I deemed back in December and January, but it was before the offseason was done, then we may be staring at a world where Vientos is going to get a great opportunity to play first base. And Brett Beatty could get that opportunity in right field, in third base here and there, if Bichette sits, at second base, if you sit Semien, and also at DH, because Polanco's probably not playing 162 games. So I ask this question, and I know we're going to do a lot of this when we get closer to opening day. We make a lot of predictions. I'm going to ask you right now, Hoff, because I've been thinking about it. I'll ask the Rico audience out there right now. When this season is complete, when we're sitting there, hopefully in November, not October, because we would have had October baseball to talk about, and we're breaking down every aspect of the season that was, who will end it up? Not good English. Hold on.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
So good, so good, so good.
New spring arrivals are at Nordstrom Rack stores now. Get ready to save big with up to 60% off Rag & Bone, Marc Jacobs, Free People, and more.
How did I not know Rack has Adidas?
Because there's always something new.
Join the Nordy Club to unlock exclusive discounts, shop new arrivals first, and more. Plus, buy online and pick up at your favorite Rack store for free. Great brands, great prices. That's why you Rack.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
Who will have ended up? Is that correct?
That's better. That makes more sense.
Who will have ended up playing the most innings at first base for the New York Mets in 2026? Bang. Answer that.
And he's on the roster right now?
I mean, do you not think he's on the roster right now?
I mean, there's always a possibility of a trade. I would say my guess is this is tough. Well, it's not Polanco.
I think if I would have asked that question 2 weeks ago, we would have guessed it. Polanco's the first baseman. Yeah. You're saying it's not going to be Polanco. You read enough in the Mendy's comments about DHing and playing the matchups and even Polanco's own history of not being healthy, which is a part of his history. You're already to tell us that it's not Jorge Polanco?
It's not Polanco. I'm telling you right now, if I had to guess, it's going to be Beatty. It's going to be
you
Brett
think
Beatty.
It's going to be Brett Beatty.
Yeah. Because they love Brett Beatty. They're going to give him every opportunity possible. And Mark Vientos has a very short leash. I think Vientos' leash is very small these days. If he doesn't perform at all, they're just going to move on from him.
Yeah, that's my answer, though. I think it's going to be Mark Vientos. Mm-hmm. And it's weird to even say this, but I admit it. Like, if you would have asked me this question a week ago, I wouldn't have said Mark Vientos. But the reason I get there is, A, I have some faith in him. Like, he's going to have to hit. Like, he's not going to end up playing the most innings at first base by putting up the same offensive production as a year ago. That's not going to happen. But Mark Vientos has no other way to play a position unless the Mets are just declaring to the world, which they sort of did during the offseason, he's the DH. That's it. No other place. Well, if Polanco's going to DH a lot, then is Vientos gone, which is certainly possible? Is he just riding the pine? He cannot be sent down. He has no more options left. Where does he fit? And since I do think he's going to produce offensively, I think he's going to end up playing the most innings at first base. I don't know what he's going to be defensively. I hope he's working his butt off. I hope that he calls up Keith Hernandez while he's down there and says, hey, Keith, work with me. I heard you say I'm awkward. I am. Help me. Jorge Polanco has already reached out to Keith Hernandez. At least that's the report that he plans to. So I'm going to predict Mark Vientos, and I don't feel comfortable making that prediction, but I'd ask everybody out there, like, who's it going to be? Is it going to be Polanco? Is it Beatty? Is it Vientos? Or, and I doubt it, is it someone not currently on the roster? I just don't know how it comes about. Like, are they making a spring training trade for Christian Walker? By the way, you wanted Nick Castellanos. He's with the Padres playing first base.
I know. I know. I mean, listen, they're just stealing my ideas, dude. That's what the Padres are doing.
You
they know
never said first base.
I never said anything. I just said, just get him here.
That's right.
I said DH, whatever. And here's the thing is, I'm telling you right now, if Vientos is the leader in the clubhouse at the end of the year, it's still going to be under 50%. Like, he's not playing like 150 games at first base. He's playing like 80.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it would probably be some kind of split number. Like, I don't think it's going to be some massive number. The other guy to keep an eye on when we talk about this, when we bring up who's going to end up playing first base a lot, is a guy that we did see in this Met-Yankee game, and that's Ryan Clifford. And I was excited to see Ryan Clifford because we've heard his name a lot. We know about where they got him from. He was in the Justin Verlander trade a couple of seasons ago, and Drew Gilbert is no longer with us. He's not dead. He's just on a different team. Traded to the San Francisco Giants in the Tyler Rogers trade. And Clifford's numbers down in the minors last year, they were mixed, but they were pretty good. Like, they were almost Lucas Duda-ian kind of numbers. Like, a lot of pop, he gets on base, does not hit for a high batting average. Ryan Clifford is an outfielder and a first baseman. And you go through his history, he has split time at both positions. And when I Google, hey, is Ryan Clifford a good first baseman? Which is a very basic question, but hey, what is the scouting report on Ryan Clifford as a first baseman and as an outfielder? What I hear is he has a lot to work on in the outfield, but he is projected as a guy who could make the major leagues playing both positions. So is there an avenue to the fourth man in this conversation being Ryan Clifford? The answer is yeah. I mean, it is absolutely on the table. When you said, Hoff, is it possible the answer to the question isn't on the team? I think the likeliest guy, at least not on the 26-man roster to start the season, is Ryan Clifford. And I think the route for him to get here is twofold. Number one, I get him learning the outfield. I get the versatility aspect of things. The way the Mets are built right now, with Carson Benj getting every chance to play right field, with Luis Robert Jr. being here, with Juan Soto being here, and with Tyrone Taylor and MJ Melendez and even Mike Tauchman being suitable players, and even a guy like AJ Ewing, who's impressive, they've got outfield options. They've got outfield depth. I'm not saying it's the greatest outfield depth in the world, but I would rather Ryan Clifford play a lot of first base just because his best avenue to the Mets this season, yeah, I'm talking this season, would be first base. So I know there's only so many times people can play first base. Like I mentioned on the last Rico, I want Ronnie Mauricio to go down there and play first base. Like someone, like you can't have three guys playing first base, I guess is the moral of the story. I fully understand that. But Clifford is a guy to keep an eye on. He didn't look great in his brief at-bats. He struck out, got kind of overwhelmed by Luisiel high fastball that struck him out in the second inning. He grounded out in the fourth inning, flied out in the sixth inning. Not that I want to judge that much on a few at-bats in spring training, but he is somebody definitely to keep an eye on. Just to give you what he did last year, first of all, he's 22 years old, so he's still very, very young. Left-hand hitter. He's 6'3", 200, but it jumped out at me when he came to the plate. He didn't feel as big as that description. Last year, he split time between Binghamton and Syracuse. When he was in Binghamton, he hit .243, but an .848 OPS with 24 home runs and 75 RBIs. When he went to AAA Syracuse, he played 34 games. He hit .219, but a .359 on base and a .754 OPS with five home runs and 18 RBIs. So clearly, AAA is where he should go. But considering he got there last year and actually was more productive in AAA than Carson Benge was, not that I'm trying to compare them, but just to show you he's not that far off, I think if Ryan Clifford goes to AAA and hits and is at least a suitable defensive first baseman, that could be the answer. That could be the first base answer. But a lot of things are going to have to happen for that opportunity to come his way. And part of it is bad. Part of it is the guys in front of him are going to have to struggle. But I was excited to see Ryan Clifford. I was just excited to see him get a couple of at-bats. The other guys from this game, Carson Benge, obviously led off and played right field. Carlos Mendoza, after this game, was asked, what'd you think of Carson Benge? And it's the same question we all probably had. Like, if you watch this game and you watch some of his at-bats, hey, what'd you think of Carson Benge? And the truth is, there's nothing to think about Carson Benge. He took three at-bats. He grounded out to first base. He bounced into a double play with some hard contact against a tough lefty in Tim Hill, and he popped up weakly to shortstop. What does it all mean? It means nothing. I mean, that's the truth. Like, Carson Benge needs to play a lot. He will probably, I make you this prediction, very dopey, who cares prediction, but I'm going to make it anyway. Carson Benge will lead the Mets in plate appearances in spring training. Like, ultimately, he's going to play a lot. He's going to play an awful lot, and I think you'll get a better idea over a bigger sample size. It's going to suck because we can't watch every game. So I mentioned the other day that Carlos Mendoza said, you know, we're going to look for specific things like good at-bats. It's tough to know a good at-bat when you're just looking at a box score or you're looking at MLB game day. So, unfortunately, that's part of the frustration of spring training. You can't see every game. Even some of the highlights for the games that aren't televised are usually the behind-the-catcher view. I'm such a hypocrite. I'll tell you why. I hate the behind-the-catcher view. I can't stand it. Whenever they show highlights of that in spring training, it bothers me. And if you watch an old baseball game, like if you ever watched the 1953 World Series, it's on YouTube. I know. It's 90% behind the catcher view. And it drives me nuts. And maybe it drives you nuts. But here's why I'm a hypocrite. Hoff, can you figure out why I'm a hypocrite? Can you see where I'm going with this? That I hate the behind the catcher view. And as I say it, I know I'm a raging hypocrite.
Well,
why?
Yeah, because your favorite seats in the house are behind the catcher.
Look at you. You nailed it. I don't understand myself. Like, how come when I go to a game, God, I love behind home plate. What a view. Meanwhile, if they show that on TV, I want to throw something at the TV screen. Doesn't make any sense. So I know I'm a hypocrite, but just the way I feel. Anyhow, there's nothing to read from Carson Benge. There just isn't. Hopefully he just continues to get at-bats. He stays healthy. And I hope he wins the job. I really do. I don't think it should be forced. I think he's got to go out there and perform. I don't think it's the end of the world if you're looking at Mike Tauchman and MJ Melendez and Tyrone Taylor and Brett Beatty and some kind of combination of those guys. Not because I love them, not because it's the long-term solution, but because you don't want to rush a young player. And I think if other guys are stepping up, and I have some faith in some of the other guys I expect to step up, then it's not going to kill you. So I hope Benge wins the job, but don't force the issue. Let's get to some of your emails, therico@gmail.com. This is off the beaten path, but I kind of like that. It's spring training. We're having fun. Jose writes, to feed the idea of the big bad heel Dodgers, how about at the All-Star break, the All-Star game becomes MLB All-Stars versus the Dodgers. What do you think? You like that idea, Huff?
I mean, that's basically what it's going to be, right? They're all going to make the NL. No, aren't they? That's usually what it, like, remember the years when the Yankees were going to the World Series consistently?
Yes.
And like everybody on the AL All-Star team was a Yankee.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is going to be the same thing.
Many years ago, well before my time, I'm sure some people in the audience remember this, Otto Graham would coach the college All-Stars versus the Super Bowl champions or the NFL champ. I'm trying to get the story straight, but bottom line is I think Otto Graham, the legendary Otto Graham, would coach all of these young college All-Stars against a championship team. And I think hockey did it too. I think hockey had, look that up, since Hoff's Mr. Hockey now with American hero Jack Hughes winning us the gold medal.
USA, I think, baby.
Years ago, there used to be an All-Star game where it was the defending champions against an All-Star team. So I don't even think Jose knows this, but his Dodger idea, I think, has been used before. I'm not against it. I know he was screwing around, but hey, we're trying all these different things with All-Star games, you know, making it international, things like that. Why not? Honestly, the best idea, I think, for an All-Star game is to make the WBC Finals, the World Baseball Classic Finals, the All-Star game. So when you have the WBC, I know that's not every year, but we obviously have it this year, have your tournament, and then once the championship is set, whatever it is, it's Japan, USA, it's DR Puerto Rico, it's Korea against Canada, it doesn't matter. Whatever the finals are, the championship game gets played on All-Star Tuesday. You could even just do Final Four and have the two semifinals on Tuesday and a championship game Wednesday, something of that nature. So
how the hell did you know the hockey thing?
I was right, right?
Yeah, it happened. The first time I think it happened was 1947, but it happened a few other times too.
I'm kind of offended. Like, why are you surprised that I knew that?
Well, that's just an oddball thing. Like, I mean, you're not the hockey buff. I am. I should know that.
I'm no hockey expert, but I know weird things. Like, I know the Devils used to be the Colorado Rockies, and yes, before that, they were the Kansas City Scouts or whatever they were. I know that, so I got some weird knowledge. Anyhow, I wanted to read this email for a while. This is from Dan, sometimes called Negative Dan. But Dan, who is a big contributor to the Rico, was also somebody who for years hated the core. He was one of the originals who wanted the core broken up, the core of Nimmo, Alonzo, whatever you want to call it, Jeff McNeil. And so he wrote the eulogy of the core, Death by Epler. I'd like to read that to you guys. Death by Epler, right? That sounds interesting. We all know how much I absolutely despise this core and literally have confetti falling on me while popping champagne in my living room now that we are finally free from 99% of the losers. Count your days, Francisco. But all of this has me thinking that the line of demarcation for the downfall of this group was the trade deadline of 2022. Billy Epler foregoing the deal with the Cubs to get David Robertson and Wilson Contreras because the prospect ask was too steep. He was probably talking about Beatty and Vientos, which makes it even worse knowing what we now, I think, set the tone for everything that's happened since. They had the division by the balls, needed to go for the kill in a year where they were one of the favorites to win the pennant, which for us basically never comes along. And instead, he winds up going with the three buffoons of Vogelbach, Ruff, and Naquin. Shortly after the collapse obviously happens, and I can't help but think if the front office showed these guys they were going for it, maybe things wind up differently. Maybe they hold on to the division and don't have to play that wild card round after collapsing, have an actual competitive playoff series run, and it winds up changing the mentality of this whole team. Instead of thinking of themselves as losers, which you can clearly tell they do right now with how mentally defeated they constantly are, maybe they would have had the ability to pull themselves out of rough patches instead of spiraling themselves into oblivion. But as the saying goes, if my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle. So let's celebrate our Independence Day and rip to the worst core money could buy. The trade deadline of 2022 was epically bad. There is no denying that. And it wasn't just the Contreras, David Robertson thing. They had a chance to trade for JD Martinez. And I think we saw in 2024 the value of a JD Martinez. If we live in a world in which we think about how different everything would have been with one move or one non-move, we're going to go crazy. I tend to think that even with the trades that you mentioned, even if they won the division, that if that team was going to go out as meekly as it did to San Diego, and it did, that it was eventually going to meet its end. And the reality is, let's say they go to the NLCS, right? Let's say they beat the Phillies and they play the Padres, assuming everything falls the same way, except they're the division winner, and they lose in five, right? They just get annihilated because eventually they were going to get annihilated. Would it really make a difference? Would it have changed anything? Like, if 23 was going to play out the same way, and 24 was going to play out the same way, and 25 was going to play out the same way, and it probably would have, I don't think a run in 22 necessarily would have changed anything, then you're overthinking the impact of it. It doesn't mean that the deadline didn't suck. It sucked, and you were right about that. But I don't know if it changes all of history. Let's get back to the current team. Rich writes, Evan, it feels pretty obvious at this point that Jorge Polanco is rarely, if ever, going to play first base. That may have been the thought when he signed, but once the Mets struck out with Kyle Tucker and had to pivot to Bo Bichette at third, displacing Brett Beatty, everything changed. Since then, Carlos Mendoza's comments about protecting Polanco's health and not needing him in the field every day have been pretty telling. With Polanco's durability concerns, it doesn't make sense to teach him a new position when Mark Vientos already has first base experience and Beatty is the healthier athlete and knows the infield. Beatty's getting reps there, and this really looks like it's lining up for Beatty and Vientos to platoon at first, with Polanco mostly DHing Rich. I can't disagree. It does kind of feel that way. And I'm not mad at Polanco DHing, because I made the case a lot during the offseason that I prefer Polanco as a DH for some of the reasons you gave. It isn't even the surgery from a year and a half ago. It's just overall the nature of Polanco and his health and keeping him healthy and the value of him as an offensive player. And then even the value of him, if need be, playing a game here and there at third base or second base or, yes, learning first base and being able to do it once in a while. Like, I do think there's a value to that. But I think when I was saying that a few months ago, I was also hoping they were going to bring in a real first baseman, which is not something that they actually did. But yeah, it is starting to trend that way. Keep an eye on how many games he actually plays at first base for the Mets this season. But I agree. We've spent a lot of time talking about it today. I think we're looking at first base maybe a little bit differently than we thought a few weeks ago. Fantasy League. All right, I appreciate the emails. I have been racking my brain trying to figure out how I'm going to have all the names inside of some lottery bin. So this is not good for the environment, but I started printing out every email I got with your fantasy applications. And so I'm going to take each piece of paper. I feel bad saying this because I like the environment. Like this one, this was a guy named Joseph announcing his entry into the Rico Bronya Fantasy League. I'm going to, you know, put it in a little ball, put it in a hat. It's going to be a giant hat, not an actual Giants hat, but like a really big hat. And coming up in a few weeks, we will pull the 10 names. All right. It is going to be a 14 team league. It's going to be head to head. All right. If you don't like it, too freaking bad. This is the league, kind of the league Hoff and I have played in for many years. We have 10 open spots. There are four spots locked in. Me, Hoff. We finally tracked down the originator of the fantasy idea. I emailed him. He knows he's in. He knows he's good to go. And Dan, for all that he's contributed. But I've gotten a few people who have suggested that there should be multiple minor leagues in which everyone who doesn't make it can participate. And then the champions of each league could get automatic bids in the Rico Bronya Fantasy League for 2027. I am fine with that. I don't know how we're going to do that. We'll figure that out. But I do know 10 lucky people will get to join the Rico Bronya Fantasy League. So we will pull those names in just a few weeks. I look forward to it. If you're going to spring training, Hoff and I are going down there in 2 weeks. I can't believe it. We're going down to Florida. I will tell you a funny story. When Hoff and I were going back and forth, I don't know if you remember this, Pete. We were going back and forth on what week we should go down to spring training. There were 2 weeks. There were 2 weeks we considered. The week we're going, which is March 8th, the weekend of March 8th, March 7th, March 8th, March 9th, whatever that weekend is. Let me pull up a calendar just to make sure I've got everything straight.
Yeah, 7th and 8th.
7th, 8th, 7th and 8th, right. Leaving on the 6th at night. Saturday, we'll be doing a live Rico Bronya from bar. It's going to be awesome. Das Beer Garden, which is a cool place. They posted us before in Jupiter. And then on Sunday, we'll have another live Rico. It was that weekend or it was this weekend? And thank God we didn't pick this weekend. Not that the games would have been bad or the time wouldn't have been fun, but could you? We would have been stuck in Florida, Hoff. Which,
we would not be here.
I mean, I don't know what the hell we would have done.
I'll tell you now, I'm already getting threatened by Carton saying that if I he doesn't care what I do during the weekend, but I have to be here on Monday. I cannot miss a shift. So I would have been screwed. I would have been fired again for like the fourth time.
You would have. No, I think you would have. I mean, I guess like it's tough because on your end, you can't really do your job down in Florida necessarily. I guess I just would have done shows from Florida, which isn't the worst thing in the world, but
you've done it from the airport. It'd be great.
Exactly.
From the bar.
Exactly. Speaking of Florida, I'm actually going to Florida a few weekends in a row. I'm going this weekend, next week, I guess, in a couple of days. And so I'm taking a couple of days off from Evan and Tiki, but I never take off from Rico. So I will warn you guys that the Sunday Rico, for those that have not caught up on our recording schedule, we guarantee 2 a week, but we tend to do like 3, 4, 5 a week. But Wednesdays and Sundays are always guarantees during the off season. And then during the regular season, it's always when a series ends and we throw in others. So during the off season, Wednesdays and Sundays are guarantees. I don't think we've ever missed a Wednesday and a Sunday during this off season. Next Sunday, I'm flying back from Florida. So I'm thinking of doing the Rico from the airport. So there may be an airport Rico Bronya on Sunday. Or the other option, if you prefer, is I'll do it from my sister's pool on Sunday morning. So I'll give you like a nice view, pool in the background, and I'll do a floating Rico Bronya. Actually, I think I like a floating Rico.
Is the shirt on or off? That's what I need to know.
Do you want it on or do you want it off?
I think I want it off because then, yes, then we should definitely do it from the pool. If not, if we do it from the airport, then you got to be at a bar and you have to be drunk.
Yeah.
Like, do like a pre-drunk Rico.
That's true. I think I'll do it from the pool. I think the pool will be a lot more fun. All right. So tune into that. But make sure you download the Rico Bro and you never miss an episode. We guarantee 2 a week, but we end up doing like 4 or 5 times a week. We're pretty crazy. If you've missed any of the last few Ricos, just go into the archives. You can download it. We talk a variety of subjects. We appreciate you listening, subscribing. Make sure you follow the WFAN YouTube page if you ever want to watch the Rico Bronya live, which some are doing right now. Thank you. Stay safe, and thanks for listening to Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
Jackson Hewitt knows taxes are complicated, and with multiple jobs and tax forms, they're like Sonata complicated. Our no surprise pricing keeps things simple. Jackson Hewitt does your taxes for only $149 or less. And since we know all the new tax codes, you could get thousands back. So what are you waiting for? Hurry. File with Jackson Hewitt today for only $149 or less, guaranteed. Limited time offer for new clients on federal returns. Participating locations only. Terms at jacksonhewitt.com/149.